This is Jay from Jay's Politics Blog Podcast, and you're listening to the Podcast 99 Network.
Hello?
Podcast of verbal narcissism for ugly journalists.
Hello, can I talk to Mr. David? Jay Bowman?
Approach and identify.
Hello?
Have you ever seen a submarine movie?
Oh my God. Operation Petticoat, Das Boot, The Enemy Below, Run Silent, Run Deep, Gray Lady Down.
Ooh, Yellow Submarine.
Yellow Submarine, yes. Well, there's so many submarine movies.
From the Pac Northwest studio of the Podcast 99 Network, located in beautiful downtown Silverdale, Washington, this is Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show podcast. Now, here is your host, the submarine-qualified, well-coffeed, rules-driven, elitist history buff, Dave Bowman.
Weapons con, you have permission to fire.
Have permission to fire, con, weapons out.
Well, good morning, good evening, or good afternoon, wherever you are and whatever you do. A lot of things happening in the world today, most of them far beyond our control, you might say. So perhaps it's time we took a pause and thought about life and thought about the laws of gravity, philosophy, politics, winter's wonderful sports, and humanity. Don't touch that dial. Just try to hear me out for a while. Well, the Winter Olympic Games are underway. Hands down, I prefer the Winter Games over the summer version. And the stories this time are every bit as compelling as ever, including one American who's overcome a lot just to even be there. The great government shutdown number two of 2018 is over. Questions, complaints, and concerns, however, are not. The president says yet to declassifying a Democrat memo, which he says endangers national security. Come on. Would a political party really endanger national security just to score a few debate points? Here's how you get a hold of me. The text machine is area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 565-3283. The email is dave at thedavebowmanshow.com. And of course, we're on the web. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show, Facebook, Twitter, and on the web. Eloqui conditio, the greatest enemy of knowledge, is not ignorance. It is the illusion of knowledge. Well, welcome to the show. It's a Saturday night. Glad to be here with you as the Olympics have kicked off. I'm an Olympic junkie. Those of you that have been with the show for a while know that. Back in, well, let's see, what was it? 2010, 2014, we had the Winter Games while I was on the radio. And they were on in the studio the whole time. If they weren't on the studio, they were streaming on whatever devices we had in there. The 14 games was a lot of fun. Kevin and I had a blast with the whole Sochi thing. But I really, the Winter Games are my go-to games. It's what I really, really love. And the reason I love it is just the sports themselves are so, to me, so enthralling. They are interesting. They are fun. And I think that's what it really comes down to, is the fun of those particular sports. There's three of them that I just absolutely, I can't miss. Okay. So number one is ice hockey. I love ice hockey. Always loved ice hockey. It is one of my favorite games. It's the game I enjoyed playing, the sport I enjoyed playing the most. There's a lot of reasons why, and this isn't the time or place for it, but I played ice hockey and inline roller hockey for probably about 20 years, and it was great. I loved it, and it was, I don't know, it was really, as a competitive sport, it's the most fun I've ever had, and some of the best people I've ever met playing that game. The second thing I can't miss is curling. I have no idea why curling is so popular, but it is. It's really become, in the past few years, curling has become insanely popular in the United States of America. And I think it's because of the fact that it's brooms and a rock, and everybody thinks they can do it without ever really understanding that you got to stand on ice in shoes to do it. But we all look at it and we go, what game I could play? It looks like shuffleboard. So curling has become very popular. But my favorite Olympic sport, my my number one can't miss. All of my alerts on my phone are set to let me know when it's on, and the TV is set already to record, is ski jumping. I love ski jumping. The truth of the matter is that if I could do one fantasy sport, you know, if they had like Olympic fantasy camp, sure, maybe playing hockey would have been all right, but ski jumping is what I want to do. And I have this vision of myself flying like Mats Wilander, not Wilander, what's the guy's name? The Flying Finn. I can't think of his last name now. It's not Wilander. Wilander's the hockey player. Look that up, will you? Anyway, the Flying Finn, they called him, and he was the best of all time. And then he went on to this insane career after he got done with his Olympics career, which included, by the way, an attempted murder charge that he served time for. So he did a couple of albums and stuff. But at the same time, he was flying, and everybody dreams of flying like Mats was Eddie the Eagle of particular fame. There was a movie last year or year before about Eddie the Eagle, and Eddie the Eagle was the guy that everybody loved, who had absolutely no business. The Olympics was furious about the fact that he was even there. He would never qualify today, and in fact didn't qualify after the 88 Olympics in Calgary. But he was fun to watch, and I just imagine that's about how I would look going down and making 50-meter jumps instead of 110-meter jumps and kind of landing on my butt. But it would be fun, just that feeling of soaring through the air. And when you watch it on TV, it's so majestic, and the split of the skis, and that they're flying. And, of course, if you really study the sport, you understand they're only about, I don't know, 10 or 15 feet off the ground. They're not really that high in the air, but it just looks like it because of the slope of the hill. And it's amazing. It's something I'd really want to do. And those are the ones that I don't miss those sports. Ice hockey, I love. I'm actually glad, you know, in the chat room they're talking about, and the chat room is available, by the way. If you scroll down, you can go over there on the right, and there's a pop-out chat room. You can be a part of that. Jay's in there, and he's talking about the hockey. Go Avs. You, of course, mean Les Habitants, the Canadians. But I'm glad. This is the first year in a while now. What has it been, about 12 years now, that they've been using NHL players. Yeah, Matty Nykänen, that's him. Thank you, chat room. Nykänen, that's the guy. Matty Nykänen was the Flying Finn. Anyway, see, that's why I'm glad to have a chat room back again. I don't have to look this stuff up anymore. I can just throw things out there and they can do that. I love being live again. The hockey, the basketball started it in 92 with the Dream Team, but then the hockey started using NHL players. And I got to be honest, I lost interest in the Olympic hockey tournament at that point. I really did. If I want to watch NHL players or Elite League players from Europe or whatever, I can watch that on, you know, TV or buy a ticket to the game or whatever. In the Olympics, I want to see something different, something that captures the Olympic spirit. I want to see the 1980 Olympic team. I want to see the 1984 Olympic team. I want to see the 1960 Olympic team. I want to see that kind of stuff. I don't even like it in basketball. The 92 was different. The Dream Team, when they sent, you know, Michael Jordan and Carl Malone and John Stockton and Charles Barkley, that was fine for a year. The standout for that, to me, is still the kid from Angola. Remember the center kid from Angola? The big, I mean, he had to be about 9 feet tall and about an inch and a half wide, just skinny as a rail. And I guess he tried to post up on Charles Barkley, and Barkley just absolutely lamb-blasted him. Barkley just absolutely blew him out of the water. And the upshot of it was that after he blew him out of the water, he threw an elbow at him and hit them. And in the process of hitting them, he knocked this kid down. He got him with the elbow right in the chest and knocked the living snot out of this kid. And the kid, you know, I mean, he's on the ground, and it's obvious that this has been a flagrant foul, I guess, is the best way to call it. But, yeah, Larry Bird was on that team, too. But he they were talking to this kid after the game, and he says, well, what did you I mean, you got it was a flagrant foul. I mean, and the kid was like, did you see that? Did you see that? Charles Barkley elbowed me, and he was so excited about the fact that Charles Barkley, this world-famous NHL or NBA player, had elbowed him and knocked him down. So it was just kind of one of those things. Anyway, when they started using NHL players, the one I really remember is Nagano. Was that 92? I think 92 was Nagano. And they sent all the NHL players over there to Japan, and they just, not only did they not play well, they just played like they didn't care. But they acted like it, too. They didn't stay in the Olympic Village. They destroyed their hotel. They were just, I mean, it was embarrassing. It was absolutely embarrassing. And it was something that I hope we never see again. And I certainly, I'm actually glad the NHL has said no. You know, we don't need it. We need to see kids that are actually working their butts off. And that's what we've got. We're back to having college kids and NHL veterans who aren't you know, playing in the NHL anymore. I'm okay with that. I think it'll be a good tournament. Now, obviously, the KHL, the elite leagues, the Swedish leagues, the European leagues have not done that. So you'll see a higher level, I think, from the European teams. And I'm past the point now in my life. The fall of the Soviet Union changed the Olympics for me. It really did. The Olympics used to be, beat those dirty commies, beat those communist sons of guns, beat those Soviet scumbags, beat those godless commie slime balls. Without the Soviets anymore, I just don't really, I guess I'm just not that nationalistic about it anymore, if that makes sense. It doesn't bother me to see Finland beat us or Finland beat Sweden or, you know, whatever. I'm okay with it now. I don't even get upset about losing necessarily to Russia. More often we're losing to Canada. And it just makes it more interesting. And of course the women's side of this is even better. The women's hockey. Holy crap. I don't know. I told you I played hockey for about 20 years, and I will tell you point blank, women are the meanest players you'll ever play with, ever. They will cup check you. They will swing at you. They will do things because they think that the referee is going to let them get away with it. And they know that if you retaliate, you're dead. You're going to get a major penalty or whatever. And so they do that crap to tick you off and then stand there and act all sweet about it. Oh, I don't know what he's talking about. It was, and some of them get reputations for that too. And, you know, things even out over time. But playing with women was always interesting, not from a scenery standpoint. It just, some of them were really, really good, and some of them were really, really challenging to play against, and some of them were a lot of fun to play with. I mean, it's just a fact, and I enjoy watching the women's hockey. It's not as competitively balanced as the men's side because you have Canada and the United States and then everybody else, and Canada and the U.S., of course. That titanic battle last time in Sochi, going into overtime, and see what happens this time. It's a lot of fun. Anyway, I love the Winter Games. The Olympic spirit is fantastic to me. The Winter Games are my favorite. I'll watch the Summer Games. I've been to the Summer Games. I went in Atlanta. I lived in Atlanta in 96. I had a fantastic time going to the Games. They're just not my favorite sports. I don't get into... While I like to run myself, I don't really enjoy watching other people run and lift things. It's just not my thing. But I did enjoy it. The Winter Games, I just really like. I watched the biathlon today. I sat here at my desk, supposed to be working on stuff, and watched the biathlon. I wasn't, you know, halfway paying attention to it. But I turned physically around and watched people ski and shoot. And I thought to myself, man, I'd like to do that. That would be fun. Of course, this Winter Olympics in Pyeongchang, Korea, has already generated a lot of interest on the world stage because of the nature of the games being held in Korea. If you're not familiar with the map of Korea, Pyeongchang is relatively close to the DMZ. It's relatively close to North Korea. It's in the northern upper right-hand corner, the upper northern corner of South Korea. It's close to the ocean, the Pacific Ocean. It's higher elevation. Obviously, it has snow, and it's considered very beautiful part of the country. It really is nice. The upshot of all this is the program for the opening was, of course, designed to kind of talk about the dichotomy of Korea being divided in two, and the yin and the yang of things, and the hopes for peace, and yet the fears that they have with regards to the potential for conflict. And of course, all of this was overshadowed by the idea that North Korea had sent, at the last minute, athletes and representatives and a cheerleading squad. I don't know if you saw this, but they sent like 250 cheerleaders. North Korea did. And these cheerleaders are all over social media. They're all over this. They are running away with the popularity of the games. They're waving, they're leading cheers and chants and songs and for everything in all the games. And it's really kind of cute and kind of funny. But there's that eerie feeling of, well, we want to enjoy this, but it's North Korea. Do we really enjoy it? Do we really trust these people hanging over the whole thing? You got you got Kim Jong-un's sister up there watching this. And of course, the Korean teams marched in as one with the white flag with Korea on it as a unified team from Korea, which on the surface of it gives a lot of people hope and a lot of people excitement for peace and a lot of that kind of stuff. But again, there's that underlying concern. Is this real? Is this really going on? Do we really trust this? Do we really believe this? And what happens in 17 days when this is all over? Do we just go back to normal? Or is there something perhaps to this? And of course, I think we all hope that there is, but reality is there's still the Kim Jongs, and you can talk about unification all you want, but Kim Jong-un is not going to run for president and be elected as president of a united Korea. And he's got to know that. Likewise, the South Koreans have got to know that the Kim Jongs aren't going to just go away. They're not going to just give up power. So I don't know how this is going to work. I don't know if it really means anything or not. You hope it does, but ultimately, will it? And the answer is nobody really knows. Nobody really has any clear idea of what's going to happen with this. A couple of impressions from the opening ceremonies. I'm not a big fan of opening ceremonies. Number one, in my view, they're just way too long. And that's speaking as an American who only gets to really see the redacted version of it that NBC puts out. They don't put out the whole thing. I mean, even the Parade of Nations, man, they cut that down. they skip over people. I mean, they'll skip them, but they'll give you like a quick shot of some country from somewhere that you've never heard of, and then they go on to the next one. And the big countries they pay attention to, the ones they have something interesting to say about, they'll pay attention to for a moment, but then as a general rule, they just kind of fly through that, and they've really cut that way down. They obviously paid a lot of attention to America last night in our ridiculous heated jackets and those gloves. How they look, you know what they reminded of, those gloves? Remember Lloyd Christmas? Dumb and Dumber, Jim Carrey's character, Jim, when he was wearing those gloves that had the tassels on them. That's all I could think when I saw those. I started laughing. I thought, who in the world came up with that? But that's what they wore. So with their heated jackets and everything else, the Bermudans came in. Bermuda sent a team to the Winter Games, if you can believe that. Wore shorts, Bermuda shorts. Of course they did. But of course, the hit of the night was the Tongans. The team from Tonga. This kid, man, I don't even try his name. I'm not even going to try his name. You know who I'm talking about. He's the kid that went into Rio 2 years ago, led the Tonga team into the Rio Olympics there, shirtless, oiled up with doing the Tongan Samoanese dance, whatever it was. And I mean, he was a hit. Everybody loved him. Of course, the women all went bananas. Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo. All the men went yeah, I don't have to worry about him, right? You're not turned on by him, right? And of course, well, everybody was, but I'm, you know, everybody, he's a handsome man. Okay. Anyway, he showed up last night at the Winter Olympics 2 years later. Now this guy has never seen snow in his life when he leads the Tonganese into the Summer Games 2 years ago. He's never seen snow in his life, but he enjoys this so much, this whole Olympic thing so much, that he decides, I want to go again. And so he learns how to cross country ski from nothing to being able to qualify. And remember the Eddie the Eagle rule. You can't just win your country's thing. You can't just do it and say, well, look, I'm representing. You got to qualify. You got to be in the top 50 or the top, I think it's 30% if there's more than 50. You got to qualify. And he qualifies. He qualified as a cross country skier to make it back in 2 years. Never seen snow in 2 years. He's an Olympic skier. And led his team in last night after saying he wasn't going to do it because he's crazy. But, of course, he stripped down to his shorts and oiled up and carried that flag and everybody went bananas. And I thought, this is why I love the Olympics. This is the kind of thing, these stories of these kids that are willing to do stuff. He has no chance of winning, folks. No chance at all. None. But he will be more remembered. Even if he won the gold medal by some, you know, miracle, everybody else gets the norovirus, everybody else falls down, whatever. Even if he won the gold medal by some miraculous thing, he will never be remembered for that. But he will always be remembered for walking into that stadium in 20 degree weather, shirtless and oiled up and ready to go. And the effort that he put in to even get there is amazing to me. And we have other kids there. There's other stories. There's so many other people who are there with no chance at all of accomplishing a medal. There are people there that, you know, there's an article in Wired today about, well, these Olympians, they never make any money off this. It's not a good paying career. We got a kid on the ski team, kind of. And I'm not exactly sure how they're working this. I don't know if he's on the ski team or not. His name is Wiley Maple. Wiley Maple. He is not technically on the U.S. team, but he's at the Olympics. He paid his own way to go because he's on what they call the B team. He's like 25th in the world and you got to be in the top, or 26th, and you got to be in the top 25 to be on the team. And so the U.S. ski team says, we're not going to put any money into a guy who really can't compete. And so they won't pay for anything. So if he wants to go, they say, well, you can go, but you got to pay your own way. And so this kid, he's 24, Wiley Maple, spent all of last year, the entire last year, working physical manual labor, painting, delivering food for a barbecue place in Aspen, working his tail off, not to mention overcoming, I think it's 4 or 5 surgeries, including a knee surgery, somewhat similar to my own problem. He has a patella problem. Mine was inverse. His was on the other side. But at any rate, he's had multiple surgeries. And he managed to still be, you know, reasonably competitive. But he managed to raise $30,000 on his own. $30,000 to get himself to Pyeongchang. Again, no chance whatsoever of winning this. No chance whatsoever of doing anything other than, I'm taking a picture to send to my wife right now. Sorry if you're watching on the video. That's what I was doing because my wife is asking me a question about my heart. I'll talk about it later. This kid has no chance of winning anything. Again, unless everybody else comes down with norovirus or some, you know, miracle happens and he's all of a sudden, you know, somehow or another able to pull off a miracle. But he wanted to be there so bad. And I started wondering myself, why? Why would you want to be there so badly that you'll go out and raise $30,000, come up, work your butt off to make that kind of money to go to the Olympics? What's at the Olympics that's so worth all of that? And I guess the answer is, what you saw on all the faces last night. There were joys on those faces. Watching those kids march in to the stadium, people will never hear their name. We don't know anything about them. Watch the guy from India, the sledder from India. Led his, you know, he was really much the whole team. He leads his team in last night. Today he crashes. And you know what he does after he crashes? He gets up and like Hector, what is it called? Hector Villanueva, not Helio Kansai. Helio, I can't think of the race car driver's name. Helio Castronovas. He climbs the fence where the Indian fans are for the winter games, and he starts hugging them and clapping, and they're just having a great old time. I hope Wiley gets a chance to celebrate. I really do. I hope he makes a fantastic run, makes it to the finals, even if he doesn't win, just because he's worked so hard to be there. This is what the Olympics really is all about. It's what it's really captures in my mind, and it's something that I really, really enjoy. And I'm looking forward to the next 15, 16 days now. I'm not sure how many days there are because the way the time works with air over here, but we'll see how it goes, and we'll see what takes it on. I got to take a break. It is Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show, right here on Podcast 99 Network. Stay with us. Back right after this.
About 70% of U.S. adults age 65 or older have high blood pressure, and only about half have it under control. Blood pressure medicine can protect the heart, brain, and kidneys, but many people aren't taking it as directed. This means they may skip doses or stop taking it altogether. To help patients, healthcare systems can involve the entire healthcare team to ensure patients are taking medicine as directed. Simplify blood pressure treatment by prescribing 90-day refills and combination medicines. Coordinate pill refills and prescribe generic medicines, encourage the use of home blood pressure monitors, and address financial barriers such as high copays and deductibles. Patients, follow your healthcare team's instructions on how much medicine to take, how often, and how long to take it. Ask questions about how to correctly take your medicines and why you need them. Use weekly pill boxes or a reminder system to keep track of when to take medicine. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/vital signs.
This is a message from CDC.
After hurricanes, tornadoes, and floods, standing water and excess moisture help mold grow in your home, garage, and other structures. When you return to a home that has been flooded, know that you're likely to have mold. Mold puts your family's health at risk. If you have mold growing in your home, you should clean it up and fix other water problems, such as leaks in roofs, walls, or plumbing. Keep your children and pets out of affected areas until you've cleaned. Control moisture in your home to prevent mold growth. To remove mold growth from hard surfaces, use commercial products, soap and water, or a bleach solution of no more than 1 cup of household laundry bleach in 1 gallon of water. Follow the manufacturer's instructions. Never mix bleach with ammonia or other household cleaners. It will produce dangerous, toxic fumes. Open windows and doors to provide fresh air.
For more information, visit cdc.gov or call 1-800-CDC-INFO.
Hey, this is the Scotsman.
And this is Drew.
And coming up on the next Ale Evangelist show, it's the Battle Royale.
Light featherweight versus light featherweight.
Macro versus micro light American lager. We're going to see how craft beer stacks up against macro beer. So tune into the next Ale Evangelist show on the Podcast 99, where California talks.
Hey, did I tell you guys I got a goat?
Hey, welcome back. It is Plausibly Live, the Dave Bowman Show podcast, live on the Podcast 99 Internet Radio Network. That's what I was talking about earlier. Every now and then, I'm going to push the wrong button. There you go. Glad you're with us tonight as we're live on a Saturday evening and talking about some of the things that are happening. The Olympics are certainly important. The second I mentioned right before the break there, my heart, I'm not sure what's going on with my heart. I'm having a real, my blood pressure is fine. My blood pressure is like 109 over 70, 67, but my heart rate, my wife will tell you that my heart rate has always been extraordinarily low. But for some reason, over the past 3 or 4 days, it's been really high. And don't say it's because of the coffee you drink, because I've actually been drinking less coffee lately than I normally would. Not sure what's going on, and I got to get a handle on it. Could just be stress from watching the government almost, well, it did. It did shut down, the great shutdown number 2 of 2018. We had it. And, boy, this is one of those cases where there's a part of me that's furious about it. And there's a part of me that just wants to throw up my hands and go, what next? What other thing could they possibly do to incredibly screw up everything? It's kind of like this. I said this the other day. I don't have a problem with a shutdown philosophically. Functionally, I have a huge problem with it because there's, I got a house payment to make, and for all practical purposes, we are now a military family. We are a family that, works. I mean, my wife is in the military. She's a civilian. I get that. But functionally, she works with the Navy, for the Navy. And she's considered essential. She's a nurse, all of that kind of stuff. She's our livelihood is just like if we were active duty military. And there's something about the way these shutdowns are handled that's really starting to piss me off that I hadn't really thought about before. And that is the fact that why in God's name are we punishing the people that we say are most important to us? For God's sakes, President Trump wants to have a military parade to show off, to show our appreciation for the military. It's not on my list of things to talk about tonight, but I think it's an incredibly dumb idea. Not because I'm not nationalistic, not because I'm not militaristic, not because I don't love the military, but because I know that it's a dog and pony show, and there's nothing military people love more than getting ready for a big dog and pony show for no reason. Put all that aside. We keep talking about how we're for this, and then those are the people that we screw over by saying, well, we're going to shut down. You don't think these congressmen are going to miss a house payment, do you? Their staffs aren't going to. The only people that are going to miss out on anything, the only people that are going to struggle, the only people that aren't going to, the government's not going to come back and say, well, we realize we caused your house payment or your credit card payments or whatever to be late. So not only here's what we owe you, but here's what we incurred for you on your behalf in late fees and everything else. They're not going to do that. The principle of the shutdown, I get. I get what Rand Paul was saying. I've heard it all before. I've been saying this for 14 years. I've been saying to you that the only difference between the Republicans and the Democrats was what? Functionally, the only difference for me, for the Republicans and the Democrats, for the last 14 years, since the day I went on the air in August of 2007, the only difference is that 14 years? No. That's 11 years. Anyway, the only difference has been that the Republicans asked me to vote for them and they asked me to give them money. That's it. That's the only difference. The Democrats never come to me and say, Dave, we'd really like to have your support. Dave, we'd really like for you to send us money. They don't send me fundraising emails. The Republicans do. That's it. It's the only difference. I've said that from day one, and I've caught hell for it. I've had Republican sycophants who have told me over and over again, Democrats will raise your taxes. Democrats will spend more money. Democrats will. Republicans do too. And now we see that power is more important and buying benefits is more important than anything else. And that's what we're doing, right? That's what this Republican budget does. And to that vein, I get what Rand Paul's saying. And I agree with him. He's right. We're spending too much money. His little grandstanding fit, however, was pointless. He accomplished absolutely nothing by doing this. I guess I, The theory is that we're all supposed to be talking about these issues now, but for God's sake, we've been talking about them for years. We've been talking about the fact that we're borrowing too much money, printing too much money, spending too much money since when? Since the 80s. How many of you remember? That's how long I've been doing it. Remember Ronald Reagan's State of the Union address when he brought the budget to the State of the Union address? And he piled that thing up there and he said, I will not, don't send me another one of these. If you send me another one of these, I will not sign it. Boom. And everybody stood and cheered. And guess what? Here we are, all these. No, read my lips. No new taxes. Yep, new taxes. State of California, same way. State of Washington, same way. Doesn't matter. It's not about spending. It's about power. And power. Spending equals power. And when you can buy votes and you can buy things with government money, that's what happens. And that's what these people are doing. I get what Rand Paul is saying about the dangers of the economic aspects of things, but what he ought to be talking about is the reality that our liberty is being stolen from us and that this is power. That we're dependent on government somehow or another, and you know, it always happens this way. I mean, again, in my situation, I look at it and go, well, if the government shuts down, we're kind of screwed, you know? Depending on the timing of it, we could get into a lot of problems. But the average American, I mean, the last times it shut down, it didn't affect me at all, other than the fact that there were, you know, national parks workers hanging up sheets so that I couldn't see the mountain when I drove by. I mean, that may have been the dumbest thing I've ever said. Or the stupid barricades outside the World War II monument. That was wonderful when the World War II vets were yanking those down and throwing them in the street. That was beautiful. Loved it. But I mean, from a general effect, it didn't affect me really at all. I mean, if I got up tomorrow morning and Washington, D.C. had turned into a gigantic sinkhole and disappeared, would my life really change that much? I mean, my wife's paycheck would change that much, sure, but they'd just figure out another way around it. So I'm not sure that I need Washington, D.C. that much, but they've got us so buffaloed that we do. They've got us so convinced that they know everything, that they're doing everything, that they control everything, that they're in charge of everything, that we just kind of acquiesce it and let it go. And I think if Rand Paul had kind of taken that aspect of it, I might have gone, yeah, let's do this. But just shutting down the government just to make a point that everybody in the world has been making for the last 30 years, and nobody, including the Pauls, have done a damn thing about, you know. Maybe you don't care, but you know, you don't have to make my house payment. And sailors and soldiers and airmen and Marine and Coasties, you know, they got bills and they got families to feed too. Why the hell are we cutting their pay off for this government shutdown? How does this happen? And it really, at what point do we say to ourselves, there are certain things that should always be funded? And there shouldn't even be a debate. In fact, we don't even need a continuing resolution. It's automatic. And one of those things is military pay. Then we could probably get down to and having more reasonable discussions. And of course, part of this whole thing is immigration, which is a complete smokescreen anyway. You know, Republicans are all screaming about, well, Democrats just want, you know, illegal immigrant votes. They don't want the votes. They don't, illegal immigrants don't vote. They don't want the votes. They want the registrations. Why? Because registrations are what determine apportionment. That's what they want. That's why all these congressmen, including Denham in CD 10 in Modesto, it's what his exact words to me were, Dave, how am I supposed to fund my voter registration scheme? His word, not mine. I complained for years on the air. Registration keeps going up. Voting participation keeps going down. They don't care. Why? And I couldn't figure it out. And I finally figured it out over this DACA thing. It's not about votes. It's about registrations for apportionments. Because if you can apportion properly, what do you get? You get absolute control over everything. And that's why this whole budget fight, this whole DACA fight, it's complete total nonsense. It's just political posturing. It's just screwing over good people so that they can look important. And at some point, Mr. Paul should have said that. He should have said, we're just a bunch of self-opinionated windbags with nothing really important to say and nothing that hasn't been said for the last 20 years, 30 years, 40 years. But boy, do we think we're important. We think we're so important that we can't get nothing done. And at the end of the day, what do they get done? Absolutely freaking nothing. Not a thing. And what do we have to show for it? Well, this particular shutdown, not much. And we got the 2-year budget. Not that that matters, because that just means in 2 years we'll have the same fight again. Only then we'll be in the run-up to a presidential election. So it'll be a presidential issue. And if you think that the Republicans are going to stand fast on spending then, if you think they're going to actually solve, quote unquote, immigration before then, you're, well, delusional. And at the same time, you're really dumb. They're not going to do that. They're not going to do anything that in any way, shape, or form will threaten their power. That's what this is all about. It's about power. And of course, they've managed to keep that. It's Plausibly Live, the Dave McCann, 565-DAVE, 209-565-3283 is the text machine. You can join us in the chat room. Love to hear from you this evening. Email us, dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. Stay with us. We're going to take one more quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Ireland for the Will Rogers Institute.
Are you worried that your kids aren't spending enough time being physically active? The best fitness is family activity. Ride bikes, play soccer, or just take a walk through the neighborhood. The important thing is to get your children moving with you. For more information on family activities and fitness, call the Will Rogers Institute.
Call toll-free 877-957-7575 or visit wrinstitute.org and find us on Facebook and Twitter.
Obesity is a leading cancer risk factor. Overweight and obesity are associated with at least 13 types of cancer. Unfortunately, 2 out of 3 adults in the United States weigh more than recommended. More than half of Americans don't know that overweight and obesity can increase their risk for cancer. Some states and communities provide support that can help people get to and keep a healthy weight. Activities include supporting comprehensive cancer control programs that focus on cancer prevention, education, screening, quality of care, and survivorship. Making it easier to choose healthy food options where people live, work, learn, and play. Building communities that make it safer and easier for people to be physically active. And partnering with business and civic leaders to make community changes that increase healthy eating and active living. To learn more, visit cdc.gov/vital signs.
This is Jay from Jay's Politics Blog Podcast, and you're listening to the Podcast 99 Network.
I don't just question your commitment to the mission, Lana. I question your commitment to America.
Hey, welcome back. It is the Plausibly Live podcast, the Dave Bowman Show podcast. You can tell I spent a lot of time in California because I put the before everything. That's a California thing there. And that's a really bad Southern accent. Welcome back. I'm Dave. It is, as I said, a live show here on a Saturday night. You want to join us? Area code 209-565-DAVE is the text machine and the voicemail machine. That is open 24-7, by the way. If you're listening to this later on podcast or watching the video, hi. You can still text me at that number. You can email me, dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And, of course, you can comment on our Facebook page, our Twitter page. Just look for The Dave Bowman Show. And I'd be remiss if I didn't plug Constitution Thursday. We did a live Constitution Thursday this week, too. So you want to check that out at ConstitutionThursday.com. By the way, Jay only wants $1,740 to apply to run for United States Senate in the state of Washington. Hey, GoFundMe. It worked for Wiley Maple to get to the—he raised $30,000 to go to the Olympics. So try that. Speaking of weird things happening in Congress. So the president today, President of the United States, Donald Trump, informed the Democrats wrote a memo, a counter memo. So this memo thing is getting crazy. So first we had the Nunes memo. Then we had the Grassley memo. Then we had the Democrat memo, but which we already had. We had the Democrat memo the same time that the Nunes memo was out. But the Republicans in Congress said, no, we're not releasing that. No, 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 we're not going to. Which was kind of a dick move. I mean, it really was. And it was a dumb move. And I talked about this the other day about the fact, look, this is an assumption that we, the American people, are stupid, that we don't know that these memos are politically, these memos about political bias in the government are politically biased. And somehow or another, they think we're not smart enough to see that. And so they played for tit for tat. And then the Democrats rewrote their memo. And so now they've come out with another one that the Republicans in Congress said, okay, we'll go ahead and release this one. Knowing full well that the president would go, no, we're not. This one endangers national security. This memo has to be redacted. This memo has to pull things out. This memo has to be. And of course, now there's all kinds of questions about what will he redact? What will he take out? If he takes out stuff, then it won't matter. He'll hide stuff and blah, blah, which is, of course, what the Democrats wanted all along. Which is why this whole thing is just kabuki theater. It really is. All of these memos are just stupid. All of these memos are just a bunch of children whining. Man, he said this about me. Mom, they did that. Mom, here's the proof he did that. That's all this is. It's a bunch of politically biased memos about political bias in the government. Really? Duh. I'm sorry. I'm going to say this. Some of you aren't going to like this. Russia did not influence the election. Nobody from Russia changed any voter's mind. Period. You can believe it till the cows come home. I don't really care. But you can't show me a single person, not one, whose mind was changed because a Russian did something to them. Controlled their minds or somehow or another influenced them. $150,000 worth of ads on Facebook. Yeah, I could say a really bad word here, but I'm trying not to do that because we're live on the air again. It's a bunch of horse bleep. You know it. I know it. Even Facebook knows it because Facebook is about making money. And if it really worked, believe me, they'd be saying that. It didn't. You'd have to have the brains of cabbage to believe this. And so what we have here are a bunch of people who are mad about whatever did happen. They're mad about what... It can't be anything wrong with us. It has to be the idiot voters. It has to be influence. It has to be some outside thing. It has to be a full moon. It has to be whatever. It can't be this way. Like a Patriots fan trying to explain to me the other day why the Eagles didn't really win. We had more yards. So? I don't care. You didn't have more points. Well, we had more votes. So? You didn't have them the right way. You know the rules. There's nothing. There were no secrets here. Nobody went into this election going, well, they're going to change the rules at last minute. It didn't happen that way. And anybody trying to tell me that it is a moron. Sorry, you just are. Get over it. And in the meantime, we got all these memos flying around that suddenly one side says, well, that's going to endanger national security. And then the other side says, well, no, your memo endangers national security. Yours does. And yet none of this nonsense endangers national security in any way, shape, or form. Does anybody not understand that Russia is our titular enemy? Does anyone not understand that Russia is going to try to hack every system we have? China's doing it. North Korea's doing it. Hell, Andorra's doing it. Greece is doing it. Do you know that we're doing it too, right? You understand that we're doing it to them too. You understand that we're trying to interfere with everybody else's elections as well. You get that, right? And yet somehow or another, we the American people are so stupid that we can't figure this out. We're so dumb that somehow or another, we elected Donald Trump president, but we can't figure out what's a national security threat to us. The fact of the matter is that Russia, North Korea, China, everyone else are trying to hack into every computer system we have, including the ones that control our infrastructure projects, our electric grids, our nuclear control systems for our power plants, all of that kind of stuff. They're trying to do that. But we're worried about this. We're worried about a dossier. We're worried about who's talking to who. It's like World War I all over again. We ended up with a world war, the end of which was, I don't know if you knew this or not, but this is the anniversary of the day this happened. The Russians were fighting in World War I against Germany, right? And they were losing. You had the Russian Revolution, and the Tsar had to abdicate, and so he had to leave his throne, and the government fell into chaos, and you had a white government, and the Reds were fighting against them. The whites wanted to continue the war. The Reds didn't. The Reds won. They sent a peace delegation to talk to the Germans. The Germans were not in a really, really happy mood about this whole thing. So they were really pushing hard. They were like, no, you're going to pay for this. You're going to do this. You're going to give up this. You're going to, and the Russians were like, well, we don't know. We're just not sure. We think about it. Maybe they were dragging their feet. And the reason they were dragging their feet was they were hoping that there would be a communist revolution in Germany and maybe in France and maybe in England all at the same time. And then they wouldn't have to deal with the Germans in Austria, Hungary, and everywhere else. And so they kept dragging their feet. And so the Germans, Hindenburg got, and Ludendorff got pissed off about that, and today's the day that they basically said to the Russians, the new Soviets, take the terms or we're going to kick your ass. That's what they said. And we got this huge army right here already ready to go. You either take our terms today or we're going to come kick your ass. And you know what the Russians did? You know what the Soviet government did, which at that point really wasn't even truly the government of Russia yet. They were still kind of fighting for that. But you know what they did? Anybody? Bueller? They got up from the table and went, we're not fighting anymore. And they turned around and walked out. So we're done. We're through. The war's over. Bye. You can do whatever you want. We don't care. And left. And that's the same situation we're kind of in now, isn't it? We got these two sides that are just arguing over the most inane, minute, stupid crap. And we, the American people, are almost at the point where we're just ready to stand up and go, we're done. Bye. You guys, just go. Just go away. We don't care anymore. You know what they ought to do? I you know, the president's not going to listen to me, not going to listen to anybody in talk radio, but just release the damn memo. Let the people decide whether it is or isn't. And if it really does endanger national security, then the Democrats will look like idiots for doing it. Really? The Democrats are really going to write a memo that's going to endanger, that they know is going to endanger national security because they want it released? If it proves their point, if it proves their point, then release it. I'm not so beholden to Donald Trump that if there wasn't a smoking gun that said he colluded with Russia to convince people to vote for him, fine. We'll get rid of him. I doubt seriously that this memo does that any more than the Nunes memo proved that it didn't happen. Release it all. Let us see it. There's nothing, I guarantee you, there is nothing in there that at the end of the day is going to go, national security is being violated. I mean, for God's sakes, the Secretary of State was sending emails over an unencrypted private server that were labeled confidential, top secret, whatever. And nobody cares about that. Why do we suddenly care about this? Just release it. Just send it out. Let everybody see it. Let everybody read it. Let all of us decide for ourselves what it says. Quit telling us what it says. Let us read it for ourselves and decide. If we, the American people, stood up and told them that, You know what would happen? I guarantee you, if we stood up and said, you know what, we want to read all this stuff, we're going to design, you know what would happen? They'd stop writing memos. They'd stop talking. They'd stop. Their heads would get so low, so fast, that it would make your head spin. And at the end of the day, we would be the winners, because then maybe they'd actually go to work instead of, you know, diddling around with whatever it is that they're doing, which has nothing to do with anything we actually want done. What do you think? 565 Dave, 209-565-3283, telephone and text. You can leave me a voicemail when we're not on the air. I think that number will actually work if we're on the air. And you can also send me an email, dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. And check us out online, plausiblylive.com, thedavebowmanshow.com, podcast99.org. And of course, we're on Facebook and Twitter, so all of those things will get you to us, and you can check us out there. Got to get running. Take the time right now. Tell the people that matter in your life you love them very much. You'd miss them if they weren't there, so don't pass up those opportunities. You don't want to have that regret. I'm Dave Bowman, Plausibly Live. This is The Dave Bowman Show, live on the Podcast 99 Radio Internet Network.
Plausibly Live is a Slippery Fish Entertainment production for the Podcast 99 Network. To contact Dave directly, call or text area code 209-565-DAVE. That's 209-565-3283. The email address is dave@thedavebowmanshow.com. For more information or to hear past shows, go to www.plausiblylive.com.
Hey, I'm going to go do something productive. I'm going to go watch television.
Hey there, Rod Bowe here from the Ale Evangelist Show, and you're listening to the Podcast 99 Radio Network.